and welcome to a new episode and a new season of the Computomics podcast. My name is Anna Ross, and I look forward to kick off this new season with my guest, Matthias Nachtmann. He's pioneering sustainable productivity in agriculture at BASF. Welcome to the podcast, Matthias.
Hi, good to meet you, Anna.
You too. It's a pleasure to have you. As you know, I've given you a bit of a teaser. We like to start things off a bit out of left field with an icebreaker. So I checked out your LinkedIn profile and I saw that you describe yourself there as an eternal learner, which really spoke to me. And I was wondering, what was the last learning experience that inspired you?
So I'm sitting here in a German Western Germany, a city close to France. And this season was so special for barley and wheat growers. And we knew that weather is a challenge. So that's why for a food customer, we divided the production in two parts, is produced in Bavaria, parts in close to Mannheim, and parts produced in Northern Hesse. And we thought we considered the production risks in farming enough. But what I did not consider is that we didn't look for, is this as an early, a mid or a late harvesting season for wheat and barley. Mm-hmm. And we lost more than half of the, or our farmers lost more than half of the yield this year.
Ooh.
And the learning was like, just go back what I learned from the forefathers and really considering there is early, mid, and late harvesting regions, and not only consider territory, but have a closer look on the agronomy dependencies in that area. So mm-hmm. next year we will balance by region, but consider as well early, mid, and late harvesting areas to reduce the risk and to be able to supply. Yeah, and this was a learning reached me in during summer vacation.
No.
But it's we talk in agriculture about a natural product, the only production system that is happening in real environment,
mm-hmm.
similar like livestock and like forestry, and that's. That comes with it. Yeah, but that was the recent learning. Consider always the harvesting period, harvesting characteristic, early, mid, late.
Mm-hmm. So regional specificity of harvesting conditions. Wow, that sounds like a painful learning, but sometimes those are the best.
Yeah, painful for the farmers, firstly, because for them it's an impact on the sales and on the value they have harvested at the end of the season. And also painful for the food industry because they considered that volumes already.
Mm.
And because of that, also painful for me, yes.
Well, I mean, I feel like this ties in perfectly with your role at BASF, considering that you're pioneering sustainable productivity. So both sustainability and productivity are in the center of what you do. Can you give us a little bit more of an insight about your role at BASF?
Yeah. When we today look to the newspapers, follow up climate, biodiversity, water protection discussion, then it's a given other than 10, 20 years ago that sustainability is part of basically all key strategies in the food value chain. So when you take as a proxy who is engaged in Science-Based Target Initiative, which is a global organization basically attracting companies who commit to carbon footprint reduction, then you see that malters, brewers, bakers, livestock companies commit to sustainability targets. That's new. What comes with that global companies engage with sustainability commitments is they have factories which needs to be operated profitable. So to operate it profitable, you need to have a certain productivity. Mm-hmm. You need, if you have a mill, for example, they source an average in Germany, 200 kilometers around the mill, they source wheat, so at least mm-hmm. 90%. So, and if the overall productivity goes down, but the overall sustainability goes up, then we have a problem. And then these companies have a problem. Mm-hmm. So that's why today, and that's the beauty of these days, that sustainability and productivity has to go hand in hand. And this is what I try to do together with food companies, and this is what we are committed to in BSF.
And do you have specific goals in that? I mean, that's the overall mission and quite a big mission at that. So if you break it down maybe into more graspable goals, what would be a couple of goals that you set for yourself and your team?
Yeah, so what we have always when we work with food companies, let's say a Malte or a Brewer, then we are not only want to see the reduction of the carbon footprint, but we also want to see that we at least keep the yield level of a certain field, and that comes because of two reasons, or let's say if you dive one step deeper, in wheat and in barley, there is a dependency. How much nitrogen I put on is determining the yield level, but also the protein level. And the protein level is the key quality criteria. And if we would reduce the dose of nitrogen and by that optimize the carbon footprint, so the footprint would be better. But if we lose 10 to 20% on yield, then yeah, it's that would not work. Yeah. So the farmers, the value chain needs to have a certain level of productivity and an improved sustainability, and that needs to go hand in hand.
Tied to this is the Better Barley Project. This is something you're deeply involved in. Can you give us a rundown? What is the Better Barley Project?
Yeah, it was started by a challenge of a big brewing company. They said, actually, look, when we see the overall acreage of malting spring barley in Germany go down. We need to keep the brewing capacity up, and we also want to reduce the carbon footprint. And so we discussed what are the levers to support here, as let's say very at the upper end at the value chain, yeah, because usually we provide software. Fungicides, seeds, nitrogen management products to farmers. And it was very clear that if you want to reduce the carbon footprint, and if you want to keep the protein level of malting barley 9.5 to 11.5, so this is the requirement, then you need to better manage the nitrogen in a way that you can reduce the dose, but also assure that you end on yield and in protein. And that was the moment, it was in 2019, 2020, where the principal idea was born. And then we started experimenting on 2 times 4 hectares, if we can use digital farming tools for variable rate application of nitrogen so that you can fertilize much more specific the different zones in the field. And we use the product of BSF called Xarvio Field Manager for that. And we also have some nitrogen management tools like Vibelsol or Visura. With this, you can add to Visura to manure or Vibelsol to nitrogen fertilizer. And they support a longer availability of the nitrogen for the crop and a reduction of laughing gas emissions, which, and laughing gas is one of the climate changing gases, which is 300 times more negative than CO2 as such. So when with these tools, we were able to say, look, we are confident to reduce the carbon footprint, and we are confident also to keep yield and protein level. And we've proven it on 2 fields on 2 hectares. And then the year after, a brewery said, oh, let's give it a try. And now this is a product concept we are about to scale in the industry and in the market.
Makes sense. And what would you say is a realistic time frame if someone were, let's model this out. So if someone were to approach you now and say, hey, Matthias Nachtmann, we heard about this. This sounds amazing. We'd like to apply this in our company. They would approach you and then you go through a 4 week, 8 week process. How does it work? Can you give us a little bit of
It's
insight?
a three at the end, it's a three-step process, and the initial question always is what do you want? Yeah, so what is the scale you have in mind? Do you have carbon reduction targets already? What are you ready to invest compared to are you willing to make a public funding apply for a public funding program? So the customer needs the where the company is at, or There are companies who have carbon programs already, then you spice a component in, but there are also malters and brewers who just experimenting right now. So this is the first step. What do you want? The second step is to start with 1 hectare, and not in terms of that the production scale is 1 hectare, but you need when you plan 1 hectare, and if you consider a specific one, then basically you have to ask yourself the key challenges you need to consider on that 1 hectare. And with the first question, what do you want? If they want to have 1,000 ton, 10,000 tons, or 100,000 tons of low carbon footprint barley, then you just bring these questions together. And then the third question is after you, and that's the risk-taking question in the beginning. So if a company is willing to get a lot of risk, so we can start big. And if we say, let's be a little bit li risk adjusted, then it might take 1 to 3 years, where I feel the most comfortable, by the way, with to come to a scaled up solution. But so that's why the 3-step process. What do you want? How a first hectare look like, and then make a scale up plan.
Sounds very sound, very sensible, because it you can modulate it to both the needs and also the resources of a specific company, which goes back maybe to the, in a way, the regional specificity you talked about earlier in a different context as well.
Yeah, and here's another thing which maybe also your Computomics podcast listeners have in mind. So this is when you develop a new variety, or when you develop let's say a new production system, you need to make very clear assumptions on the future, and you need, if it's 10 years or 5 years, that's about the same. And you need to have a very good understanding, and that's a very interdisciplinary process. What do you want? Because if you come to a very big brewery or malter, you have one person, you have five different persons, so a sustainability lead, a digital lead, a purchasing department lead. If you ask them, what do you want? They will come with totally different 3 answers. If you then consider the farmer, what do you want? If you then consider the distributor who's providing, for example, logistics services, you might be totally confused, but you need to consider their requirements. Otherwise, and if you will not develop a sufficient process. And I think this is what Better Barley has in mind with developing and breeding new varieties. You need to have a very good understanding on what is required in the midterm in that industry segment to assure you're not missing, you're missing your goal. And that's why you need to invest that what do you want step time.
How do you go about collecting that data? Is it something that only happens within this one-on-one relationship? So if you had a client now going through the process with you, or do you go back to data you collected throughout the Better Barley project that you can kind of rely on to get a baseline?
Now, these are all puzzle pieces. So number one, I think we are really among the leading companies with BASF when it comes to digital farming. And the data sets we have from our research trials, but also from the digital farming team, give me an ability to prepare myself about the growing conditions for barley in the region where the malting factory is, for example. And so I have a rough idea about the soil types, the precipitation. So and the rough thing I can prepare for, we have the data. At the end, the specifics are much more difficult. For example, have farmers in this area storage or not? What is the production capacity? What is the storage capacity on ground of a malting company? So that you need to, that's what you need to ask and start to discuss. Because the in our case, though maybe that's a I'm not a breeding expert, but in the Better Barley case, the supply chain makes the things more challenging and either profitable or not profitable. So and these questions you need to ask. You can't find the website where you get all the storage capacity by farmers and the value chain players.
Are there certain tools, or especially machine learning, that's an obvious interest for us coming from the computomics perspective, where you see developments that might be beneficial for the system that you've established as well?
So if there's someone who can predict weather the 10, 20 days in future, that would be very interesting. So we would not, maybe would not have lost the biggest amount of yield. this year. Now, but what you see in today's products is that we use already a lot of artificial intelligence. Yeah. So when you started with a reference to the eternal learner, I thought you asked when, name an example in the past. And let's say when I started, I think in 2019, we were working on developing forecast systems for Phytophthora. So could we forecast Phytophthora? And if you looked at that time, that was basically mechanistic models. So if there is 2 weeks of temperature X and the weather was like that and so on, and if there was Phytophthora before, so it was if when. But if you look to our models today, you see much more important components also from artificial intelligence.
Makes
Picture
sense.
recognition is the next example. Yield forecasting is the next example. So there's a lot of applications where you can, and that's the beauty of data. You can take that data and support the farmers with additional insights.
Are there any that are specifically interesting to you? I'm thinking of satellites or maybe remote sensing systems.
It's maybe similar to the three-step process for better barley. It's always the question, what do we want? Yeah. And for example, also a published interesting project in that regard is the Yield Consortium, where BASF with Munich Re, John Deere, ESA, headed by the German Institute of Artificial Intelligence, DFKI. There we use two sources, remote sensing, so satellite data, NDVI analysis on the biomass on given fields and areas and zones. And we combine it also with, let's say, ground truth, so measured information in a specific field. And that together, that's the interesting thing, yeah? Just based on remote sensing, a data point alone is usually not making a difference.
It's about combining data points or like the interdisciplinary cooperation as well, right? To get everyone's data together and then look what you see when you overlay them.
Yeah,
It makes sense.
that's I think that's also the beauty of today's regenerative farming, more sustainable, productive farming, is these are all interdisciplinary, let's say, challenges where you need to connect different minds and competencies, so interdisciplinarity, to solve it. Yeah, and to solve it not in a way, hey, cool, we reduce the carbon footprint by 20%, but you also need to have an answer on the yield. And this is again guiding back to sustainable productivity.
You have maybe an example of how important it is to get everyone involved in the process and to ask very specific questions? Any story you could share from your experience?
Yeah, so the problem is with asking questions, or the challenge is with asking questions, you know you have a question, yeah, and that means you know what you don't know, but sometimes you don't know what you don't know. And to identify the what you not know, to identify, and that's why I also write Internal Learner. I'm 25 years in this industry, and I even build weather stations these days. Because I don't know which experience lasts the last 25 years and what experience changes. So, and that's why we need to go to the first production unit, I called it a hectare. Because if we work together, we have our assumption about the things we know we don't know, and we will experience the things we don't know what we don't know. And for example, a nice example is we all want to have data flowing. And we have a very good relationship working with John Deere, and our data flows nicely between Xavier Field Manager and Operations Center of John Deere. That's really fun. We just forgot to ask in one specific case in dairy, what tractor do you have? What brand? And we underestimated the amount of work that is on the farmer side to make that data flow. And with that, now I also know that I need to ask the full set of machinery on the farm to have an idea how much transformation is needed before we start working. So this explains a bit the difference between Know what you don't know and not know what you don't know.
For sure. Thank you so much for that illustrating example. You've also authored, or I should say compiled, as one of the main editors, the handbook Digital Farming, Digital Transformation for Sustainable Agriculture. Can you share some insights of, if someone were on the fence about should I read this handbook or should I not? What can they learn from it?
Yeah, I think it I can tell where it started with a problem, yeah, and it started with an accident, and the problem was that Professor Dürr and I, but also other friends in the community said, look, we invest in 10 plus years in, let's say, the so for example, AI supported, automation supported, so the next gen of IT supported. At that point in time, digital farming was somehow created. But if you look to the acreage and if you listen to farmers, there's so many open questions. Yeah. And so it was like we've gone so far, but we are not there yet. And so we said, I think, or we thought it requires, let's say, a reference point. What do we know? What do we not know? And if you go to the book, it's basically a good overview of the network we evolved over the last years. So that was the starting point. And then an accident came that the request of Springer reached us, where they said it needs such a book that is summarizing the state of the art. And so it came together. So now you also ask a little bit who can benefit from the book. So there are two ways of feedback we got. A lot of positive, but also some negative. And the negative usually comes is that they're really the in-depth, hardcore, let's say, friends who develop digital farming tools since a decade. So there's less novelty for them. But if you are, for example, if you are heading the digital department of a big mill or a big dairy cooperative, if you want to get an overview, should I dive into digital farming, yes or no, and what is the box I open, then for these guys, it might be a good entry point because it gives a pretty leveled overview about the key topics, and it gives you also an inspiration who you can ask a more detailed question. So there are professors, startups, and also corporate people writing. And I think for those guys and very engaged farmers, it can be advantageous. So from these kind of people, we got more the positive feedback.
Yeah, that's actually a really fun and also very I find very sympathetic way of putting it. So basically, that the people who can really profit from those aren't the ones that are already like super in depth and might just as well have been an author in the anthology themselves, maybe, but rather maybe someone with mid-level experience or someone who's just thinking about going into that and extending into that field of digital farming.
Yeah, and you also find some hints on the Better Barley project as well. Yeah.
That makes sense. Obviously, we will have some info in the show notes as well on that link to the Better Barley project site or references. And I would also, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the last episode of last season with Brent Attill that was also very much focused on barley. So two barley men of barley here at our podcast. So obviously this is something I would recommend and was really helpful to me to continue the conversation, but with a totally different perspective and focus. Matthias, is
Yeah, of
there
course.
anything?
I admire Brent Attill a lot, and also how he connects with RMI Analytics, the industry. And we also benefited already a lot to exposing our idea of a solution to the community. Yeah, because that's and that's somehow also referencing to the book, but also to Better Barley. We don't know the solution. Yeah, we have some components and we have some, let's say, methodological skills to build together a suitable solution for, let's say, for example, a malting or a brewing customer.
Right. I mean, if we consider what I kind of understood as one of your main dogmas, there is no way to have the perfect solution because it's has such specificity to regional factors, including whoever is involved and what their goals and needs are. So it wouldn't make sense for there to be this one solution, this one way, because the institutions and people and places that are involved in are so different. But yeah, I love that fact. Is there anything you can maybe share with the community with regards to this idea of having a network, sharing maybe just even an idea and getting that feedback loop going kind of early in the process?
Idea. I have an experience that basically made that interdisciplinary and connecting across value chain thing more important. So 4 years ago we did a biodiversity protection project with a big baker and a mill and also farmers. And we in the beginning we said let's take some video shoots, because we need to communicate to the end consumer that this is farming. And then the video taker, there was the farmer standing in front of the seeds, the pack of seeds, and the baker man. And the video shooter said, "Hey, start talking, because then it's more lively." And then it was unbelievable. First, the baker man said, "Oh, I was never on a farm, and I have not been on the mill the last 10 years. How you
Oh,
select your
wow.
seed? How you select your seed, and what is so important for you for the seed?" And then he was saying, "Yeah, look, availability and price, and did you also grow Emma, so old varieties? And what makes your decision, and what is for me important? The protein level, but now maybe less the protein level, but the actual variety that has been available." And that communication during that video shoot was like an eye opener. That we need to do this more methodologically sound. And 2 3 months later, we hired a moderator. And every time we meet, let's say, a farmer and the subsequent value chain representatives, we always moderate this, because
I
we
love that.
learned everyone has his own perspective, everyone has his own KPI, and not by definition. There is a KPI everyone understands from scratch.
Yes. That's I love that. So a co-creative approach to getting better, and for everyone to get better, to better understand what's needed to get better.
That's the beauty of strategy, because 10 years ago BASF launched the co-creation strategy, and that mindset started to grow into the organization. Nice you use this word, yeah.
Well, it's a principle that we follow as well. So I was very much connected with that, and I think it's also a beautiful point to end on because unfortunately time flew as it always does when the conversation is good. Matthias, thank you so much for coming here, for sharing your insights and your perspective, and I hope to have you back sometime.
Looking forward to it, Anna. It was a pleasure. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye bye.
Thank you for listening in today. Want to learn more? Then check out our show notes and more info on computomics.com. If you have questions or want to propose a next guest, please reach out to us at podcast@computomics.com.